Good evening, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of The Bog right here on Dave Martell YouTube channel. We got a great episode lined up for you tonight. Sorry, we weren't on last week. Had a whole bunch of stuff going on. People getting sick. People not feeling good. Crazy storms going through. We couldn't do the show. But we're back this week here on Dave Martell YouTube channel, which is live every single Friday and some Mondays at 6 p.m. Eastern. We got a couple announcements before we get started here. Let me bring my notes up for the one. But the first one here, you guys have heard me talking about it. You saw I got a little video I put up today. The Bizarre Archives will be available in 7 days. August 1st, it will be up. Bizarre Archives, Weird Tales of Monsters, Magic, and Machines. A project that was headed by yours truly. It is bringing pulp fiction, the genres of sci-fi, fantasy, and horror back into the modern times with a compilation of short stories from amateur pulp authors. You guys are really, really going to love it. We've poured our hearts and souls into this. Really cool cover art by our buddy Don Kent over there at American Zarathustra. And I'm really excited and happy to bring that onto the market for everybody. That will be available on Amazon in 7 days. But I have here, I'll post a link here in a minute, but our buddy KD, our Nerona brother, who runs a shop over in the Dakotas called The Head Shop, is doing I guess he's in some sort of competition for like the best store in town. I guess, where is it at? Black Hills, it is. So I'm going to drop a link here in a minute as soon as I stop running my mouth because I'm goofy and I forgot to put it up, but everybody go over there and go vote for our buddy KD, his business called The Head Shop. You go to the category of shopping, then CBD, and then click Head Shop, voted as the best business in Black Hills, Dakota. He's a heathen brother, good friend of mine, excellent guy, wonderful mead maker, great cook, good friend of mine, so we're going to help him out, but like always, if you want to support the Bog, go to patreon.com/thebog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. Get a sticker, you can get a mug, and most importantly, you get RSS feed of every single show that we do to listen to on audio in your car, on your commutes, at gym, or at work. That is patreon.com/thebog. Go sign up. Help us keep the lights on. You want to support the Bog another way? Make sure you go to shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop and get some sweet merch. We got all kinds of cool stuff over there, guys. Go check it out. shop.spreadshirt.com/bogshop. You want to support a friend of ours? Make sure you go to facebook.com/ironagejodish and check out some authentic ancient Vedic astrology. Go check that out. Our buddy Neil John, excellent work. And if you decide to get a reading, tell him Big Dave sent you. Is facebook.com/ironagejodish. And without further ado, Mr. Tristan, what are we talking about tonight?
Well, Dave, today we're talking about the caste system.
Very cool. So give us a rundown of what the caste system was.
Right. So when talking about the caste system, we first have to understand what exactly a caste system even is. Generally, in the modern times, we're more used to what we call a class system. These are not mutually exchangeable words. They mean very different things. A class system is based upon things like how much wealth you have, where you were born, how you were born, that sort of thing. People can look and say, oh, you're wearing a $15,000 Rolex. You must be very high class. A caste system differs in that it has no connection to any sort of material basis. A caste system is based on the lineage of one's own forebears and also the contents of your soul, effectively. So, does it matter if you're wearing a $15,000 Rolex or you're in, you know, like a potato sack? If you're part of a high caste, then that's just what you are.
Very cool. So, let's get right into it. You know, we talked about hereditary birth and the quality of birth. So let's go into what are the different kind of roles in the caste system. Sorry if I'm a little bit out of it today, guys. It's like 150 freaking degrees in my studio, and I'm like cooking and sweating. So if I'm a little off, that's why. I'm sorry. But
So give us an explanation of what kind of the different roles in the caste system are.
Sure. So the first role of the caste system is the highest caste, and that is the Jarl position. A Jarl is basically a lord or a priest. Like it differs most dramatically from things other people might be familiar with, like the Indian caste system, in that a Jarl is not strictly either a priest or a warrior. They fulfill both roles, effectively. They are a warrior king and a priest. Both of these two roles in society comes from the exact same caste, and everyone in that caste is, to some extent, expected to be proficient to some degree or another in both of these ideas. They are the ruling class of society. They order society and help it bring along and function.
All right. So, Ms. Ranja, I'd like you to get in here a little bit and tell us about, because you're coming from a Scandinavian country yourself, and obviously the caste system is long gone there in Norway. Is that right?
Oh, it's been gone since the medieval ages, more or less, where it was more or less forcibly abandoned. But there's still, I guess you could call it that. You know, there's still a little bit of like a remnant of it at least in the language, where things like the words of Carl and or Thrall or Trell are still words that are used to designate something as belonging to a lower or upper class, for instance.
Yeah, so in the ancient times, as Tristan explained, there was a caste system that was not too much different than how we would understand like the Hindu caste system is, right? It had you had your lowest, you had your workers, you had your kings, and so on and so forth. And so you have you had your thralls, you had your bondies. Now, the bondies aren't necessarily named in Rigsthula. Is that right, Tristan?
Right. The bondi is a very special case in Nordic society, particularly, because they're not really a proper part of the caste system overall. A bondi is basically part of the Carl class, but they don't have the lineage, the wealth, and the power to have their own proper estate, a farm, a house, something that can support other people. So in order to get by, they effectively pledge their service generationally to some other Carl or Jarl who does have this. And they effectively live as servants or workers of a lower class station, even though in metaphysical terms they are part of the Carl class. They are free men. They're not slaves.
So, but when you say slaves, we're talking about thralls. What exactly, and this, a lot of times this word gets thrown around in the Germanic community, calling people thralls. And I disagree with this. I don't think that it's, I don't think it's a good insult to just be chucking around, because despite being of low birth, thralls were an extremely important, part of society. They were cogs. They were the labor caste. They were the ones, and they weren't necessarily slaves as how we would understand slaves today. Like, they weren't really slaves as how, like, maybe colonial America had slaves, and they weren't slaves as how the Romans had slaves. So, Tristan, what would be the difference between a thrall in the Germanic caste system and, say, like, slaves in ancient Rome or in colonial America?
Well, I mean, the main difference between would be colonial America and the slaves of Nordic periods would be that they weren't brutally oppressed and chattel slaves in that sense. Slaves were often very well treated and were kept within families over generations. And there also wasn't just like an instituted sort of farming factory industry kind of thing that developed in the 1700s in America and the 1800s that required just like massive amounts, hundreds and hundreds of different slaves who formed their own community and factions and whatnot. Slaves in the Germanic sense were more like maybe a dozen people, even less probably, who resided under a single master. Generations, you know, 5-6 generations back when their ancestor was taken in a raid or something of that sort. Though I would say that I would disagree that thralls are in fact slaves, and they are slaves in a very sense that would be understood as such by most modern people. Most slaves, an emblem of slavery was in fact that they wore iron collars. They were manacled and attached in that way. They didn't have rights. They didn't have the same rights as most people anyway. They were, in legal sense, they were considered property of their master.
But there was a little bit, they had a little bit of rights, though, right? They had, you weren't allowed to just, go around killing and beating and raping your slaves.
Well, you couldn't kill, beat, or rape someone else's slaves. But strictly speaking, you could kill your own slave, or you could hurt them if you wanted to. Though some legal areas required you to pay some sort of recompense to their family or kinsmen. But this was always significantly less than it would have been for a normal person, and it's basically like a token gesture. And even that wasn't particularly common.
And these were people that were in this cast, in this role, for generations. What is, you kind of went over like hereditary versus equality of birth versus like social class in the beginning, but kind of what would be if there were thralls today, what would they look like?
Well, thralls today would be characterized by a lack of will and a lack of personal drive and competency, effectively. These are basically like people who are dumb and they don't have any ambition and they're not really good at anything and they just sort of follow the herd and exist in life.
So for those of you that watch The Bog, I know you guys have heard me make this argument many times, is that liberalism, if we brought up the idea of thraldom, maybe not quite as, because let's be honest here, it was even harsh. It was harsh on the thralls back then, but it was even harsh among nobles back then. It was just harsh times. You know, we're not accustomed to, back in those days, back in the Iron Age, and even so, as recent as like the 1800s, if you said something wrong to somebody, they could challenge you to a duel. They could challenge you to a duel and take you out back and kill you, and they wouldn't get in trouble.
I don't want to give you the impression that just because you could kill a slave for no reason, that people were doing this like willy-nilly. It was not considered at all common and would have been severely looked down upon as like sociopathic behavior. Thralls represented a great investment and personal resource for any sort of family. And because people grew up with these slaves and their great-grandfather was part of your family, people would have been personally attached to their family's slaves in a way that you wouldn't be attached to, say, your chair or something like that.
I do believe that's actually mentioned in several stories of people who were so attached to their slaves and their slaves being attached to their masters, so much so that the slaves were willing to die for their masters, without question.
Yeah. With the Sigurd Dragonslayer, wasn't he exiled for killing somebody else's thrall in the beginning of the story?
I think you're thinking about how Sigurd was taken as a slave because him and his mother basically tricked this other conquering lord into thinking that they were the slaves because they switched places with their own slaves as a form of safety. They didn't know what the conquering lord was going to do to them, so they figured if they made themselves look to be slaves, they would probably get away from any sort of harm.
Yeah, I'm thinking of something. Was it the Volsung Saga?
Well, the Volsung Saga would be the Saga of Sigurd, effectively.
Oh, yeah, you're right.
We were talking about, like, when we mentioned this, like, how would a thrall look like today? But obviously, we're not living in a time where we have this kind of caste system anymore. So, obviously, there is something else going on here that, this is not just something that you get assigned as. This is not just something that where you're placed in a caste and that's who you are. Would you say that there is something like innate to a person's nature that is related then to their caste, be that thrall, carl, or jarl? And like, what are the big differences and changes, like the big qualities you might expect from these different castes?
Yeah, absolutely. It's very important to recognize when we're talking about the caste system that this is not a sociological construct that people invented and just like, you know, like there were really powerful people sometime and they decided that they were going to be the ones in charge and were going to be the Jarls. That's not how this functioned. The caste system was a gift given to us by the gods in order to order our society along religious lines. So it's not a sociological structure that you could just be a thrall because that's your position in society. A person is a thrall because of the contents of their own soul, that they just, they do not have the components of their own self that are necessary to be a free man or even for a Carl in order to be a Jarl. We see this in the Rigstula where, for instance, when he has his son Jarl, he is the only of his sons that he actually names and recognizes, accepts as his own son, and effectively adopts him into the clan and family. And when talking about the Germanic metaphysical system, we have to recognize that this adoption, accepting someone into the family fold, is a transfer of one's soul categories to them, so that the Jarls have the same soul structures as the gods passed down through them. Whereas the Carls necessarily don't. That doesn't mean they lack components, I guess you could say, but it's a matter of quality in that sense. Whereas I think the Thralls lack some parts of the soul entirely.
Yeah. So kind of what I, to pick up what I was going to go into before I started monologuing, was I've made this argument many times before, and I'm probably going to make it 100 more times. If you mention about thralls or a caste system or something to a modern liberal, they're going to look at you like you're nuts. They're going to, how dare you? How could you? How is it? They would feign outrage like they've just heard the most grotesque, inhuman thing that they could have possibly heard. However, if you think about it, the modern liberal will allow homeless people to sleep in squalor on trash, in these like meager, purposeless, just vile forms of existence, but then turn around and tell you that thralls are wrong. Thraldom is evil. But this guy that sleeps on his own garbage and is mentally ill and has no purpose will eventually overdose and die. At least he's free, right? At least he has his freedom, right? Freedom to be enslaved by his own vices. That's what a liberal will say. That's why they're such huge hypocrites. So if you think about the thrall caste, at first when you hear it, yeah, there's that entire lineage of people that is bred into being low-born labor people. But think about it like this. How many people do you know? Obviously, as I mentioned before, this kind of stuff is not going to be, if we reinstituted something like this, which, you know, it's probably won't happen in our lifetimes, we won't see a caste system. But if this was reinstituted.
Well, I mean, I do have to actually say here that even when we're talking about like us reinstituting the caste system and whether or not people would accept these kinds of things, it has to be understood that, like I said, these aren't sociological categories that depend on people accepting them. Like, you accepting that there is a thrall doesn't create thralls. That people are thralls whether you like it or not.
Yeah, whether they serve as thralls or if they believe that they are free, they are still thralls. No, yeah. I completely, yeah, of course. But think about it like this. These people, and we all know guys like this. I know, you know, I grew up in rural Pennsylvania. I know plenty of people that just can't get their stuff together. You know, they might have a drinking problem. They're not really that bright. They might have, they're pretty low IQ. They're good people. They're good at heart, but I know guys that are like in and out of jail. They have trouble with drinking. They can't keep a marriage together. They just can't take care of themselves. They're not smart enough to take care of themselves. But I don't look at these people like I dislike. I like a lot of these guys. They're nice guys. They're good guys.
Yeah, a thrall isn't necessarily a bad person. Like, it's not a statement upon their moral category in that sense.
No.
Thralls are often just incapable of functioning like you would expect a normal human being to do. Though they do tend to have other qualities, like they're being coarse and crude. They don't... especially for things like honor, they don't feel the blows of honor quite as strongly as someone, say, a Jarl would. They accept a lot of things naturally, a subservient position that people from a noble lineage would really take offense to, and insults of that sort, insults as well. They tolerate a lot of insults and base behavior that most people would rankle them.
Yeah, but you know, kind of what I'm getting at here is that if we had thralls nowadays, how many people do you guys listening, you guys in the audience that are listening tonight, how many guys do you know that would be much better off if they were in a position in life where somebody told them, hey, you work in the fields from this time to this time, here's where you live, you know, here are the women that you're allowed to marry from, here's beer, here is food. How many people would thrive in that? You know what I mean? Just don't break the rules. Don't be a piece of crap. Don't steal. Don't do nothing like that. And just work, eat, drink, have your family, and that's it. How many people nowadays would thrive in that? You know what I mean? And when they're not in that, they are thrust into the meat grinder that is modernity, where they can't take care of themselves. So what do? They end up in prison, they end up on drugs, they end up drinking, they end up homeless, they end up in really bad positions where these people, you know, thralls or not, they deserve quality of life. So I look at it as like a thrall caste should be looked upon with compassion as well, because these are still your kin, they're just not as smart. You know what I mean? And they could be useful. All of society, here's what separates modernity and individualism and liberalism from Indo-European societies. Indo-European societies were these collective living organisms where everything from the high to the low all had a place and all worked together. Modernity, on the other hand, everybody is just at war with each other, trying to gather the most peanuts for themselves. And it's just not how a society can maintain itself. You know, you could say what you want. People can be outraged and dislike caste systems and everything like that. But look at, look at India, for example. India still, for the most part, has a caste system. That society has kept itself together for thousands of years. Thousands and thousands of years. It's like the oldest civilization on the planet. In contrast, modern democracies can't keep themselves together for a century before blowing each other up or ending in catastrophe and starvation. They can't keep it together for a damn century. United States has it together for what? We're on 300 years, but it's going down. 300 years is nothing compared to 5,000 years.
And I guess when we're talking about this aspect of having compassion for the thralls, because usually when we're talking about this, and this is for people who just hear it for the first time, or they are in the faith and they are getting told about the caste system, usually people have like this knee-jerk reaction because we have like this very liberal view of the world and a very modernistic sense of our own reality, that okay, so you want the caste system, that means that you think that you automatically should be able to boss over all the people and that you want to beat your slaves. Well, this does not at all seem to be the case, even historically, because these caste systems were in a way put in place not just to grant special privilege to, say, the top. The Jarl caste has special privileges, but that's more of a payment because they have different responsibilities, right, as well, and they have very high responsibilities. Yeah. And
being a Jarl is not just sugar plums and, you know, sugar licks here. They have lots of responsibilities and obligations, extremely strenuous ones that demand their attention and benefit of society. A Jarl's duty is to make sure that the Carls and the Thralls under them have great lives and are prosperous and successful and are guided towards the will of the gods. And like I said, like you're saying, but some sort of compassion towards the Thralls is a necessary position to do this. These are still, they might have been considered property in a sense, but they were still considered part of society and part of your obligation to society.
Would you then, for instance, say that it's possible to be born of a Jarl caste and still be considered a very bad Jarl.
Oh, absolutely. You can fail at the obligations and duties of your caste. Though I would say that, conversely, someone who does much better than their caste, like, it's often a question, like, so can someone raise their caste? And the answer is effectively no, at least within a single lifetime. Someone who was, say, born in a Carl caste, and was competent enough to fulfill the categories of a Jarl. Let's say he was a great leader, he was a great warrior, he was a amazing theologian, yada yada, right? What we would see here is, because the Germanic caste system is prescriptivist and not descriptivist, is that this person was simply categorized wrongly. Somewhere in his lineage, this person is a Jarl, and he has inherited the qualities of that soul.
So you're talking like guys like Crowbone. Yeah, there's a Dane back in the day. His name was Crowbone. He started out just some raider, right? And he pretty much just raided and fought and killed his way to becoming a king. So you're saying that Crowbone was a Jarl the whole time?
Yeah, effectively. If he was capable of doing that and was capable of leading armies and had the luck to do so, then yes, he always had these soul qualities within himself. You can't simply acquire them. These aren't skills you can self-actualize. They're metaphysical components that reside within your soul. You have the luck to be a good ruler, or the luck to rule armies and do battle and victory and these sorts of things.
Yeah, basically be granted a blessing from the gods that this is what you're supposed to do, and you can do it because they want it to be so.
Effectively so, yes. But they also travel in families. We have to understand that not all Jarls had the exact same quantities or types of luck within them. Some families had different lucks, and it can even go very specific. Like, say, one family has the luck needed to rule over an entire country, whereas two Jarls under him had lucks to rule over each specific, like, a different county within those countries, right? And they would not have been able to rule each other's county.
All right, we got a quick question in the chat here. Our buddy Hari says, who owned thralls, Carls or Jarls, or both? And did Jarls own Carls or just command them?
So, thralls were commonly owned by...
Tristan's gotten out. Oh, geez. All right, folks, we are back. Sorry about that. A little bit of technical difficulties. So, Mr. Tristan, where were you talking about?
Right, I was just talking about answering Hari Wolfaz about who owned Carls, or who owned thralls, rather.
That's right.
Thralls were commonly owned by both Carls and Jarls, though obviously Jarls tended to be much wealthier and could own much more thralls. And they also were much more likely to acquire them as, like, the bounty of war. Jarls did not own Carls. They were not serfs. Carls are free men. They have the right to swear fealty to whoever they wish to do so, or move, or anything of the sort. You could not own them as property. They had rights and obligations, which could not be violated.
Very cool. We are at halftime now, so I just wanted to bring this back real quick. Let me grab this link here. I'm going to drop this in the chat for everybody there. Our buddy KD, Mr. Kyle, he owns a store in the Dakotas. I can't remember if it's North or South Dakota. But he is now in a competition for the best store in his city. So he's a fellow heathen, fellow brother of Nerona, really, really great guy. And his store is called The Head Shop. You can see that on the screen right there. So he sells really good CBD to people that have back pain and sleeping problems and all that kind of stuff. He sells some really, really great products, only the best. The guy's incredible. Excellent mead maker too, by the way. So make sure to go into the chat and click that link, and then go in there, and you're going to want to click on shopping, then CBD, and then vote for The Head Shop and help our heathen brother kind of get his business going there in the city. So check that out. So anyway, let's get back to business here, boys. Back to the caste system.
Well, I have another question in that case. Just as a general like clarification, that you often see people ask because they get curious, and due to the passage of time, and these castes came in families. Like your families are Carls. You're a Carl because you were born to Carls, and they have been Carls for hundreds of years. But after a while, this caste system kind of fell out of favor. It wasn't used anymore, and the names and such just became remnants in language, as I mentioned, in Norway, and family possessions and family lineages started splitting up a little bit, and that's inevitable. So when people return to this faith, and maybe they get curious about this caste system, they would inevitably have the question, how do I know what caste I am, and how do I avoid being a Thrall?
That is a very interesting question, and it's one of the most commonly asked of me. I always have to basically start off by just apologizing to people. There isn't a hugely great answer to this. It's basically practical in what we have to work with. There's nothing more to do about it. Because the caste system is hereditary, you were born as a specific caste, whether you know about it, whether you like that caste, regardless, right? We don't know the lineages of people specifically off the bat, so all we have to do to work out what caste these people are is to look at their behavior and their competency and effectively the qualities of luck. If someone has the ability to serve as a Jarl, that he has the luck to command and rule and lead groups, to be a really good theologian, to be a priest, then we would look at this person and say, clearly this man is a Jarl, and obviously he descends from a Jarl's lineage. We could do this basically through the qualities of all the other castes and just come to this conclusion. It's going to take time and effort, and it's going to be very difficult because our understanding of who and who has been broken. I wouldn't say it's going to be easy, and it's especially for people who grew up in modern liberal societies where people have this expectation of an equality of birth. In some cases, it's going to be extremely difficult and anxiety-ridden for them to wonder exactly where they fall in this metaphysical hierarchy.
So it's just kind of... So what you're saying is there's really no way to put it back together. It would have to just happen organically. There's no way we can put it back together.
No. Actually, I would say the opposite of that. The only way we could put this back together is by making a concerted effort to do so, centralize and categorize this, and reconstruct the structure all the way down until we simply do understand that this person was a Carl because his father was a Carl, and we know that because we ascertained that his grandfather was a Carl.
We are talking and reinforcing this quite a bit because there is no clear distinction the same way you can say for a social caste, like a social class, I should say, where your tax bracket is basically what designates you as lower or upper class.
I should mention here that a lot of people get very confused and very aggressive about the topic here because maybe they didn't come from, you know, particularly well-off backgrounds. That doesn't necessarily mean you're a thrall at all. There are, at this very moment, Jarls who live in absolute poverty just because of the circumstances of the modern world. It has nothing to do with your material space, how much wealth you have, or anything of the sort. Even during the Viking Age, there were very poor Jarls who just happened to have some sort of a material lack of stuff, even though metaphysically and in their soul, they were a Jarl as much as any other Jarl.
And historically, I'm given to understand that the Carls were not where all the money was gathered, but a significant amount of the wealth was in the Carl caste.
Yeah, a very significant amount, actually, because while maybe you could say that a very powerful Jarl might have had more money and power than any individual Carl. Carls also commonly served as merchants and traders and artisans. So collectively as a caste, they might have made up like 80% of the wealth of society.
They were the earners.
Effectively, yes.
Yeah. So somebody mentioned earlier, and I don't disagree with this. I think it was our boy Nils. Who was it up there? I can't remember. But somebody mentioned about if if caste system was around today, they could see it becoming extremely corrupt. And they don't, I'm guessing they're implying that that they might not trust a modern caste system because everything else is corrupt in the Wolf Age.
Well, I mean, I, to be honest, I think that's a very fair criticism here that we can't necessarily just trust a structure because it says it's very religious and very proper and well. Everything we have has the everything we see or can do has the capability of being corrupted by modernity and effectively to become a vice. It doesn't necessarily become something blessed by the gods just because it's aesthetically based on something that we say is blessed by the gods. But all we really have to do is that is the same as any other human quality. We have to look and make sure that as people, this is in fact virtuous and correct and uncorrupted.
So we had another comment up here I wanted to bring up about a caste system. It said, India had an entire caste that were allowed to breed only so they could be sacrificed for healthy crops. That doesn't seem smart to me. That's pretty based.
I mean, I'm not going to say that's necessarily wrong because I don't know anything of that sort, but I've never heard of that, and that seems very unlikely for normal mainstream Indian society. Like, yeah, these are vegetarians who didn't even kill animals.
Yeah, it was like completely. Well, I guess he's talking about like natives, like American Asiatics, Mesoamericans.
Oh, that would make sense. But of course, these aren't Indo-European people. So even if they have a conceptually similar idea of slavery or class systems like a nobility or a caste system of that sort, it doesn't stem from the same original places, say, ours do.
No. He says India. So he is talking about India as in the East, like Arya Sindhu, India.
That's like it would be regional.
Yeah, I'm going to go off and say that if that ever happened, it was extremely niche and not widespread.
Yeah, don't they have... They were like the first religion to outlaw sacrifice, period.
Yeah, it's a very common feature in their religious structure that they basically... Like, at one point, we know that Hinduism sacrificed animals and other stuff like that just as much as the Germanic people did. And over time, towards maybe 1000 BC or something, they started seriously curtailing that back and devising new ways to do it. Like, instead of sacrificing a deer, they'll sacrifice like some equivalent amount of, you know, porridge or something.
I think he's been reading a little too much Warhammer 40K or something.
Well, the most based of all topics, but no, there's a lot of things in you'll find in various circles about India that simply aren't true. I would imagine this is probably one of them.
There's a lot of mysticism going about that, so it's easy to convince people that, you know, India is such a big, vast, and diverse country that you can basically say anything happened and people aren't going to challenge you on it. So,
Jesse asks, India is big. Weren't only part / some vegetarian? Well, it's a caste thing. Some of the castes are allowed to eat meat, whereas like some of the higher ones don't. But
I mean, really, it varies extremely based on both the ethnicity, the region, the caste, and all of these compounding factors based on like what they would traditionally have done. But generally speaking, Brahmins almost everywhere don't eat meat, and they would not have done bloody sacrifices in that sort. Though there are bloody sacrifices in some sects of Hinduism, I don't think they would have sacrificed people like that. There are examples I do know of that they sacrificed like people captured in war, but I can't say I've ever heard of them breeding slaves specifically as captives for sacrifice.
That's pretty intense. Buddy Boyo asks, were Germanics vegan? No, they were not. Eating meat and consumption of dairy were and are massively important aspects of Germanic culture And many of these proteins are considered sacred as well. Absolutely.
I mean, I would even go so far as to say that the sacrifice of an animal and the ritual consumption of it within Bloat is absolutely central to religious structure of being a Germanic heathen at all. If you were just strictly vegetarian and could not do that, I would even go as far as to say you literally could not perform your religious duties adequately.
Yeah, it was, if you went back in time and you said, hey guys, how about veganism? They'd look at you like you have two heads. It's just, number one, because it was, you know, the blood sacrifice was and still is a very, very important part of Germanic rites. And number two, they didn't have the luxury of veganism. They weren't Bronze Age cereal farmers where they had all of this large amount of grain that they could supplement. They needed their protein. It got cold. It was harsh weather. They did a lot of work. It wasn't easy. So they needed their protein.
We do have to remember that as far as we go back to the Indo-Europeans, these are a steppe people who lived in a very cold region amongst like plains. And they were effectively herders. They didn't really do a whole lot of farming. And their main crop or their main wealth was in things like cattle and horses. So when they ate stuff, it was cattle and horses and milk and cheese.
Yeah. There is nobody in the West, no European culture has ever been vegan. Like pre-Christian culture has never been vegan. That's the reason we're so big and strong. You know, I mean, there's a reason that we're big, meaty, strong people. Like, look at when was the last time you saw an Indian or a Chinaman in the NFL? Never.
Though, to be fair, I have seen some really jacked Brahmin priests that serve it, like, their lineage serves as guards to temples. And these dudes are legitimately jacked. I don't think they're actually properly vegan. Like, they eat a lot of butter and milk and cheese and dairy to build up that protein.
Yeah. Buddy says, I'm not sure what this outlet is. States Aryan morality is vegan. That's a whole nother thing. But Germanics, Western Europeans, our ancestors have never historically been vegan ever. It has never been there. We are people that, you know, it's been brought up before. We have in our genetic code LP allele, which means lactase persistence. Our bodies produce the enzymes to digest dairy into adulthood, and other groups of people do not have this. That's why they say most of the world is lactose intolerant. No, most people that, you know, aren't white people are lactose intolerant. We, on the other hand, are chugging milk till the day we die because we love it and it's good for us. You know what I mean? So dairy consumption, meat, protein, you need them B vitamins, you need the vitamin D, you need this stuff. Eating meat is good for you. It always has been, and it's a sacred, holy, Germanic thing.
Well, okay, then, just to track back a little bit, because now we're getting into dietary talk and talking about India, so we should try to get back on track here. With another question for you.
Yeah, we were talking about Germanic stuff.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
But talking about the caste system again, I have another question for Tristan.
Right, hit me with it.
It's when you mentioned that this caste system, it's genetic. It goes from family to family. It keeps within family lines. How would this pass on? For instance, in the scenario where your father is of the Carl caste and your mother is of the Carl caste, it's obvious. But say if the roles were changed and your father was of the Jarl caste, but your mother might have been of a Carl caste, would this be acceptable, and how would the resulting offspring be?
It was commonly acceptable for men of higher caste to basically marry down in some sense. Often they kept people of lower caste as effectively a concubine instead of like their main wife, though resulting children from mixed caste unions was extremely common. Though I would have to say here, the caste system isn't genetic. It's metaphysical, and it's not based in any sort of material paradigm, though it is. It descends through patriarchal lines, effectively. So you are what your father is. And in order for you to properly be your father and for you to be part of that clan, they have to both father you materially and then accept you into the clan by giving you a name and acknowledging that you're a part of that clan. If none of these things occur, then you don't inherit the qualities of the soul necessary for your caste.
So say if you're the bastard child of a Carl who then had children with a Thrall woman, but he doesn't accept you within his own caste. Does that mean you are...
The children would be thralls, yes.
Yes, okay.
But conversely, if, say, a Jarl had a child with a thrall, and he accepted the child into his family and gave him a name and acknowledged him as his son, then this son would also inherit his own... the metaphysical qualities of the Jarl caste. It's not genetic in that sense.
So, Norvin says phenotype is a good indicator of caste. Well, Norvin, what we're talking about in historical Germanic caste systems, within that caste, everybody would have been of the same phenotype.
Yeah, I mean, effectively so. Within the Germanic people, there weren't a whole lot of different phenotypes, though I think what they're getting at here is that there are different colors that are considered symbolic of the different castes within the Rigstula.
Yeah.
I don't generally think these are meant to literally be interpreted as statements of what they look like. There were personality traits that were often associated in Germanic society with different colors, and this goes back to a very long Indo-European tradition of associating qualities of the castes with different colors, even colors that people can't necessarily be. For instance, there were no, even though the thralls have a black color, that's their symbolism, there were no black thralls in Scandinavia. They would literally die. Black people can't exist in pre-modern Scandinavia.
Yeah.
They weren't black. They were white people just like everyone else.
Yeah. All right, Norvin, I know what you're talking about now. We're talking about Rigstula. I thought you were strictly speaking of phenotypes as we mean today.
Though he is correct that... it says that the different castes basically have a certain look to them. I don't think this is meant to be indicative of literally every Jarl has, for instance, blonde hair. We know very well that there were lots of accepted Jarls who didn't have blonde hair. But what they're trying to get across in the story here is that, culturally speaking, blonde hair and fair skin was seen as noble and attractive, and Jarls are noble and attractive.
Yeah, what's that called? The science of looking at somebody to see if they're a retard.
Phrenomology.
Yeah. No. The other one. Physiognomy.
Oh, physiognomy.
Physiognomy. Yeah, okay. That's it. I don't know science words. I think I don't like science. But yeah, that's what does it say? It says about thralls, how they're like gnarled or something like that. I can't remember.
They're not attractive. Black was considered to be unattractive.
But doesn't also say they have, like, hunchbacks or something? Or am I just picturing that?
They have backs gnarled with work, effectively. Like, they were... Because they had so much manual labor, they were effectively, you know, corrupted in the body. Just like if you take a really young person and basically make them carry really heavy shit their entire life, they're... In 20 years, they're going to have back problems, right? Like, this is just something that happens. Though I would counteract here that he's saying about how black in this context means black hair and eyes. We have very good examples of people who were obviously not thralls who looked like this. A good example in literature is Egil Skallagrimsson, who was considered to be very ugly and black of hair, even though his brother was very fair and blonde. And no one thought that Egil was a thrall, nor would he be representative of the qualities thereof.
Just ugly guy.
From the way I've understood it, too, is that when they're talking about people being black back in the day means blackened, in that they are maybe getting sunburned, they might have a little bit of a farmer's tan going on, they might be dirty from carrying all kinds of things, including soil, so, you know, their hands would be stained and all that.
Yeah.
And this is what's very common in most societies on Earth, that the higher class could be paler and they're fairer because they didn't have to, you know, spend time outside doing manual labor all the time.
Yeah, so when you read Germanic stuff and it talks about people being black, what they're talking about are people having swarthy features. They have darker hair, brown eyes. Sorry, they wasn't Kangs. Sorry, Cheddar Man, it ain't happening.
And even historically, when it came to taking slaves and thralls from, as like the Vikings did, for instance, they were equal opportunity. They took whoever they wanted.
Yeah, I'm going to be real with you guys. Like, my ancestors took much more Irish slaves than they took black slaves. The caste system is not to be interpreted in a racial sense. This is like a modern, corruptive, like, worshipping Hitler as a god, kind of like weird, syncretic, occultic Hindu kind of thing. This was not historically the case within Germanic society, because Germanic society is a very homogenous, mono-ethnic society. The most racially abnormal people they would have ever run into would be, like, maybe, like, Asiatic people from, like, North Eurasia.
Like the Samis or something.
Yeah, something of that sort. Maybe, like, a Mongolian-ish person. And most of them would never have even have seen those. They would only ever have seen what we would effectively call today as Northern Europeans.
Yeah, everybody was yeah, like somebody like a foreigner to them was like Irish and Welsh and Slav.
Okay, I mean, in some cases, a foreigner to them was like that guy from over the river.
Yeah.
I mean, if you were living in Denmark, a foreigner could very well just be a Swede.
Yeah, it's so true. So true. So it's like when you run these universalists are trying to use this argument for how the Eddas are talking about Africans. It's like, no, dude, they're not talking about Africans. They're talking about, you know, Europeans with dark hair. You know, they're not talking about Africans. There were no Africans in Bronze and Iron Age Europe. They didn't exist. They couldn't have lived there if they wanted to. And they didn't even know that they existed. When the Eddas were written down and when they were conceived, those people, it's a 99.99% chance they didn't even know African people were real. They had no idea Africa was a place.
People tend to get confused when they're talking about it. Oh, it's mentioned in the Eddas and so forth, when they're actually referring to the fact that it might be mentioned in a few sagas here and there. But the sagas came much later, obviously, and are stories and retellings of great adventurers and explorers and warriors and fighters or whatever. So there's a reason why they wrote these things down, and these people went on wild adventures down into the, you know, into the East, into the Middle East, like we know that they did, but not everybody did that. That wasn't a common thing to do.
Yeah.
Most people born in Scandinavia at the time would never seen the outside of their village.
There's a reason we call it a great adventure and not, like, going to the store.
Yeah. Nils makes a good point. He says this is talking about our recent point of beauty being associated with noble classes, with the Jarl caste. He says this sort of goes into the European worship of beauty. Beauty equals good in European culture. Yeah, I would definitely say that.
I would also agree with that generally speaking, Jarls are much more beautiful and fair than other castes, and this is a quality of their soul, that they have a more pure huger, effectively.
Yeah. Yeah, they associated beauty and symmetry and bodily health and things like that with beauty and with divinity as well. This was considered... You can all go to some other Indo-Europe. Look at the Romans. Look at the statues that they... Have you ever seen them... sculpt one of the gods that were like short and fat and ugly and goofy looking?
And actually, that's a very good point, because the Romans were very well known for their sculptural realism. Like, if you sculpted a senator, they often did like warts and all, like some big fat guy with warts and acne and like a scar. They included that in their sculptures, that these things were never a part of divine beings, shows that these people were meant to be viewed as pure and beautiful.
Norvin says, and we got to shut down after this. Norvin says, this is a good question. What would you say to people who argue the Germanic caste system is a corruption of the original Indo-European caste system? Those that pray, those that fight, and those that work. I would say the opposite. I would argue that the Germanic caste system is more in line with the original Indo-European caste system, and that the caste system found in India is the corruption, because it was, you know, changed over many, many years, and it was an urban system, whereas ours was an agrarian system, and it was much more smaller and localized, you know. So, and here's another thing: they did separate kind of some of these things, but the Jarl caste were warriors, they were priests, and everybody fought and everybody worked. So it wasn't like they didn't segment it quite like that.
Well, I mean, specifically for the Hindu topic, I've made the argument for years that we know that the Hindu system isn't original, because the structural differences between the Kshatriya and the Brahmin caste, they simply don't function in society without just smoothing over the details and ignoring it. For instance, like, Kshatriya are both kings and warriors, and the Brahmins are both like scholars and judges and legal people and priests. But ruling a society requires you to do both the qualities of a king, to actually rule and command and lead, and also the qualities of a Brahmin in this sense, in order to be educated, to make laws, to pass laws, to judge crimes and serve these things. These aren't separate things you can just compartmentalize in that way. In order to do that, you basically have to strip down the Kshatriya into being simply soldiers, or the Brahmins as to being only ever priests. And this isn't even a function of their own society.
Yeah. So, Norman, we could talk more about it. We could talk more about it then. But we do have to shut down for this evening. But no, I do agree with Tristan. The Hindu caste system is a corruption of the earlier Indo-Europe. I don't want to say, not necessarily say corruption, but it is an evolution or an innovation from the original Indo-European caste system due to contamination of non-Indo-European people. I would say that. And then I would say that the Germanic caste system is more in line, is probably the most in line or true to the original shape of the Indo-European caste system. Tristan, would you agree with that, or would you disagree?
I'm not sure I can agree with the exact details of that, but generally speaking, the gist of it, I would say that I would agree that the Germanic system is probably the most accurate as we reconstruct back to our ancestors from the Urheimat. Though I would say that the trifunctional hypothesis, as he mentions, is more or less just simply wrong. It's overly based upon examinations into, say, Indian society as a predicate, and without looking into societies like the Germanic.
Yeah, I would agree with that. All right, folks, we got to shut it down for this evening. I hope everybody liked the show tonight. Like I said in the beginning, here is the link in the chat right there. The Rapid City Journal. Click there and go support our buddy KD, Mr. Kyle. He's a buddy of ours, Nirona brother, heathen brother, member of the community, excellent mead maker, awesome guy. Yeah, friend of the bog since the beginning. We love him. He's one of our boys. And he has a business there in one of the Dakotas called The Head Shop. It's right there in the top right. The Head Shop, where he sells CBD. He sells the best CBD that you can get on the market. It is cheaper than the other mainstream stuff. He knows, like, he gets it right from the lab that his buddy works at. It's like really, really good stuff. It is tremendous, and it's really great, and he sells this stuff for people that have back problems and sleeping issues and people that might have, like, PTSD and stuff like that. So go over to click that link. Go check out that website. Click on shopping, then CBD, and then The Head Shop. And go support our heathen brother and his economic stuff. Support folk economy! Always. Always, always, always support folk economy to help money change hands and help our boys get rich. Health, wealth, and happiness, right? That's what I always say, health, wealth, and happiness. But another quick announcement, the Bizarre Archives, guys, Bizarrechives is coming. I've been working like a damn dog on this thing. It's coming out in 7 days. It is a compilation of short stories from amateur pulp authors in the vein of Robert E. Howard and H.P. Lovecraft, horror, sci-fi, fantasy, all kinds of stuff. I can't wait until you guys get to see this. So these guys are incredible. These authors that we got together working on this, I believe there's 15 stories. These guys are just, the talent level is off the charts. Really great stuff. So stay tuned for the Bizarrechives, Weird Tales of Monsters, Magic, and Machines. It will be coming in 7 days. So stay tuned. I will let you guys know as soon as it comes out. If you like The Bog, you support The Bog, make sure to go to patreon.com/TheBog and sign up. There's a tier for everybody, $5 all the way up to $50. You get a mug, you get a sticker, and most importantly, you get the audio and RSS feed so you can listen to every single show that we do in your car, on your commutes, at gym, or at work. So go to patreon.com/TheBog and help us keep the lights on, help us keep the show going. Or if you want to support The Bog another way, make sure to shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop in the bottom right-hand corner and get yourself some sweet merch. White Boy Summer! White Boy Summer! Get yourself a cutoff, a muscle shirt from the esoteric order of grill dads out there. Get yourself an artisan chef apron. We got bucket hats. We got backpacks. We got onesies for the babies, because everybody knows us heathen folk, we're some baby-making mofos, man. Yo, we got a friend of mine. I don't know if he wants me to say his name, but he just had his fifth kid. So we got so many hails to him, many blessings to him. Babies coming out all over the place. Get yourself, get your kids a sweet Bog onesie, Bog shirt, Bog whatever. Shop.spreadshirt.com/BogShop. And if you want to support a friend of ours, make sure you go to facebook.com/IronAgeJodish and check out our buddy Neil John. Dude, this guy, I'm telling you, this guy is so cool. The work that this guy does is incredible. I got a reading done. Everybody on the panel's got a reading done. Blew our minds. You know, I always thought horoscopes were dumb, and they are kind of dumb. But this stuff, the Vedic astrology, authentic ancient Vedic astrology that Neil John does, is off the charts. It'll blow your mind. I'll just tell you real quick. In my chart, he predicted that I had a knee injury as a teenager, and he predicted that I have nightmares about snakes. It's like, and that was just two things. I was like, how did you know this? And he just interpreted the chart and came out with it. I never said that before. On Telegram at t.me/TheBogLord, and then also like, subscribe, share here. Very important, guys. YouTube algorithm hates us. You know, you guys know how it is. The social media technocratic vampires are shutting everybody down all over the place. Our boy Tom survived the jive. Just got his whole Facebook wiped. Whole Facebook wiped. Completely ridiculous. The guy's been on that for years and years and years. Has never said a single thing that was edgy or spicy. The Bog is like 5 algorithms and all that kind of good stuff. But anyway, I'm going to quit running my mouth. I'm going on and on and on. I'll see you guys next week. Either Monday or definitely Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern, here on Dave Martell YouTube channel. And finally, one horn will be raised to our most exalted patrons, and that is going to be our friend, Mr. Corey, and our very own Andre. Hail to you guys, and hail to each and every one of the Bog Lords and Bog Maidens out there. See you guys next week, okay? Hail, many blessings.